President Duterte urged to end his deafening silence on the defiance of Beijing to leave Philippine waters. Later on in the program, we'll be talking to International Studies Professor Renato De Castro on the holding of joint military exercises between Manila and Washington amid the maritime dispute. The COVID-19 variant wreaking havoc in Brazil could become the virus's most dangerous mutation. Meanwhile, Philippine health officials still not concerned with the coronavirus variant reported in France, which is said to be undetectable by PCR tests. And a severe tropical storm threatening to dump heavy rains across the Philippines, set to enter the country by tonight or tomorrow morning. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us. Time for the president to speak up. That's the challenge issued by a former Philippine Supreme Court Associate Justice to President Rodrigo Duterte on China's incursions in Philippine waters. Retired Justice Antonio Carpio says China's activities in the West Philippine Sea show it is taking advantage of the pandemic to establish its presence in the area. He also notes China is racing to build structures there under Duterte's term because it knows the Philippine president will not take action. Capia adds Manila stands to lose 80% of its exclusive economic zone or an area larger than the country's total land area if government doesn't defend its territory.
The arbitral award said there are no historic or traditional rights in the EEZ. So that is very clear. China is trying to resurrect its arguments. This spokesperson of President Duterte said, this can be settled among friends. That means the Malacanang is downplaying this whole incident, that this can be settled among friends. But this is a very important national issue. Our sovereign rights are involved. Our sovereignty is involved. The president must speak. He must stand up himself. Because if his subordinates do the talking, China will not listen. Because China will listen only to the leader of the nation. And if the president is silent, then China will continue. But they will feel the heat because they will lose a friend.
Okay.
If the president will speak.
Malacanang earlier refused to comment on the issue. It said it will defer the matter to the Department of Defense and Foreign Affairs. The DFA has filed two fresh diplomatic protests against Beijing, reiterating its demand for China to withdraw all its vessels from the Philippines' EEZ. For the head of a U.S.-based firm that has been conducting satellite imagery analysis over the South China Sea, one way the Philippines can protect its EEZ is to occupy the area. Similarity co-founder and CEO Liz Dare says there are at least 28 unoccupied reefs, shoals, banks, and atolls in the Philippine EEZ.
If we leave them out there for the taking with no monitoring, no regular patrols, and no occupation, they're open for anybody to go grab them and occupy them themselves.
Dare says there are inexpensive ways to occupy features such as building a lighthouse or outpost, like what Vietnam does. Two bills designed to help protect the Philippines' territory pending in Congress. The chairman of the House Special Committee on the West Philippine Sea, Congressman Manuel Zagarbaria, says the first bill aims to establish archipelagic sea lanes. This will limit the passage of foreign ships and aircraft through the archipelago. The second bill will establish a delineation of the country's maritime zone. Zagarbaria expects both bills to pass the House within 1 to 2 months after Congress resumes its session in May.
This is going to be the one that is really going to determine for our government to exercise our rights over the West Philippine Sea. We are very much concerned about passing these two bills because this is going to be the one that is going to determine basically what the country would do in terms of conflicts like this that's going to happen.
Several top business groups in the Philippines backed the call for China to withdraw its vessels in the West Philippine Sea. The Philippine Chamber of Commerce, the Management Association of the Philippines, the Makati Business Club, and other groups signed a joint statement. They said the Julian Felipe Reef is undisputed Philippine territory, historically and by law. This means the Philippines has the right to use the resources in the area and to protect its economic benefits there. They also called on Beijing to refrain from becoming an imperial power and to respect the sovereignty of the Philippines and other countries. Now, the back and forth between Manila and Beijing over the maritime dispute is happening amid the holding of joint military exercises between the Philippines and the U.S. Let's just be clear there. There is no dispute. That is Philippine territory. And joining us now for a discussion on this is Professor Renato De Castro of De La Salle University's International Studies Department. Professor, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Carmina. How are you doing?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Not bad. Not bad. Yeah, I've been conducting everything here from the house.
Great.
Classes, webinar, yeah.
Great. Nice to see you. Okay, let's get into the discussion. I want to know what your thoughts are. How do you see the resumption of the Balikatan exercises between the Philippines and the U.S. during this time when we all know what is happening there in the West Philippine Sea? Go ahead, Professor.
Oh, we need it to balance China. It's to send a signal to China that we have an ally behind us, that we are not a fair game for China's imperial expansion or maritime expansion. We have an ally behind us that possibly, that of course, would provide us assistance if push comes to shove. So this is a diplomatic signal sent to an expansionist power, which is, of course, China. We've been talking about how China is, you know, deploying its maritime militia in the Winston Shoal, and simply we don't have the naval capability to challenge China. But with an ally behind us, you know, basically telling China, you know, don't cross the red line.
But what are the dangers, though, Professor De Castro, for the Philippines? Is the concern of Congressman Zarate real? His concern is that the Philippines might get caught in the middle.
We're already caught in the middle. What is he talking about? All countries in the region, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, the entire region is caught in the middle. We cannot remove the Philippines from our location and transfer it to the Arctic or Antarctica region. This is a curse of geography. That the region is, of course, right in the smack of a two great power competition. That's a reality we face in the 21st century. That is, of course, what we call the curse of geography. Unless he can think of transporting the Philippines somewhere in Mars or Uranus.
Well, the U.S., as you said a while ago, we have been caught in the middle for many years now. And the U.S. has had many countries it had tensions with in the past and also currently. And during those times, they had the basis here. So what makes this time different, Professor?
Well, it's in terms, of course, of the nature of the geostrategic competition. The main competitor is right in our backyard, and that's, of course, China. Whereas when we talk about the Cold War, the Soviet Union is out there in Europe. But, of course, the difference now is the fact that we are even, our country is threatened. And, of course, we talk about China's maritime expansion, which, of course, create a convergence of interest between the Philippines and and the United States. Simply, you know, the reality is we don't have the naval, the capability, the military capability to stand up against China. So the set, you know, this is the reality we have to face. We have to rely on an alliance.
And
alliances, it's not friendship in international relations. You form an alliance because of utilitarian purposes. And of course, it's not only the United States that's out there. You have Japan.
Exactly.
You have that.
Into that. Nothing is stopping the Philippines from forming other alliances with other countries.
Yes, but there are two elements of an alliance. Number one, of course, is capabilities. Does your ally have the capabilities to provide a multiplier effect? Among all the countries right now, we have to admit that there's only one superpower, and that's the United States. One country that has, of course, a navy that could be deployed all over the world. and that's provided to you by the United States. And of course, the difference between the United States and other countries, we have, of course, the Mutual Defense Treaty with the United States that we signed since 1951. Although the bases are gone, we still had, had ensured that the treaty is still in effect. Of course, we could also form security partners with Japan, with Vietnam. But again, the basis of an alliance is a convergence of interests, mutual interests.
Right, but how do you now take advantage of this ironclad alliance with the U.S. without having any strings attached, Professor?
Unfortunately, that's a reality of alliance. As alliance is a two-way street. You expect assistance for your ally, and your ally expects assistance from you. It's a two-way street. You know, there's string attached in all aspect of relationship. So,
and particularly when you look into the Philippines and U.S. relations, what are those strings that will attach to the U.S., that we are taking advantage of their military might during this difficult time there in the West Philippine Sea? Go ahead, Professor.
The string attached there, that all alliances have to be mutual. If an ally would provide you assistance, then your ally also expects assistance from you. That's where the string is. Of course, in our case, the best thing that we could offer the United States is our strategic location. That has been, of course, announced by no less than President Duterte. And of course, we know for a fact he doesn't like the United States. But in his speech last February 11, he's admitted it, I don't like you, but at this point, I have no choice. Because we're dealing with a neighbor that is really bent on maritime expansion at our expense. Depriving our country about 85% of our exclusive economic zone in the West Philippine Sea. And of course, creating artificial islands that have become, of course, militarized right inside our exclusive economic zone. So that's the reality we face, an expansionist country that is, of course, China.
I want to explore this other topic with you. Professor De Castro, I mean, even if you're saying that the Balikatan exercises are there to signal to China that we have this alliance with the U.S., if there is this deafening silence coming from Malacanang itself about this issue, what good of a signal is that? I mean, they can say, sure, you've got this alliance, but where is your president? Professor.
Well, that's the problem, of course. I think the problem, President, is caught in a bind. Because you remember his position in 2016. He doesn't like the Americans. He wanted the alliance to be abrogated. But, of course, he was confronted with reality. And that reality, of course, became apparent in 2017. When you remember what happened in Marawi City, in the end, his government ended up asking for American reconnaissance assistance, and of course in terms of logistics, so forth and so on. And again, this is happening again given his appeasement policy to China. And basically, I think the reason why he's absent is we haven't seen him is probably has realized the failure of his appeasement policy vis-a-vis China, that no matter what he did in appeasing China, China is simply bent on its goal of maritime expansion.
So what? He's just going to let the foreign affairs secretary and the defense secretary talk?
It's becoming apparent that the government, and when it comes to foreign policy right now, you have the two departments that are taking charge, the Department of Foreign Affairs and, of course, the Department of National Defense, and, of course, the two secretaries who are in charge with these two departments.
Right, we've been talking about the Philippines, talking about the U.S. as well. I'm going to focus now on China. Even if the Balikatan exercise signals to China that the Philippines has this its strongest ally with her, that relationship has been ironclad. And yet, Professor De Castro, the building of those artificial islands and the militarization of the same, that continues. China does what China pleases.
Yes.
How do you get her to follow and adhere to international laws and respect the sovereignty of the Philippines?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, China doesn't care about it. This is what you call China's gray zone operation. It's efforts building islands using the maritime militia. That, of course, conducting, of course, information warfare against us, creeping occupation that is below the threshold of actual military operation. That we see this happening in 1996 when they took control of Mischief Reef, then, of course, Scarborough Shoals, so forth and so on. This is, of course, the challenge that the alliance, our alliance with the United States, faces right now. How do we deal with gray zone operation? So,
any ideas?
Now, of course, this is something that the two allies will have to discuss. What would be the red line of China's gray zone operation? There's no single solution to this.
Yeah.
Of course, you know,
there have been talks about, you know, have a multilateral approach to it, talk to the other claimant countries, be the leading voice, because we are not a claimant country. That is ours. It's been proven. It's been awarded. We have the documents to prove it. Then there's also this suggestion now that maybe we should occupy the unoccupied atolls and reefs and shoals that are still there. What do you think about that?
I have no problem with that. But of course, the problem is resources. That will entail a lot of resources. It's not simply a matter of building structures there. It's also a matter of manning those structures. Probably a solution there would be technology. A satellite technology to enhance our maritime domain awareness. And again, given the limitation of the government in funding this, this is where alliance would enter the picture again. So one of the commitments of the United States, of course, in this alliance, aside from the back of deterrence, and of course, if push comes to shove, military assistance, the United States entering into the picture, is of course providing us resources for maritime domain awareness. And it's not only the United States that has been providing us, it's also, Japan. Again, but the problem is, do we have the government or the president that is determined to defend our national patrimony? Like, for example, Japan provided us 13 Coast Guard vessels. They have not been deployed in the West Philippine Sea for some time. They have been deployed in Boracay or in the Philippine Sea. Japan also provided us 5 long-range reconnaissance planes. They're not being used in the West Philippine Sea. So again, it's also a matter of reflecting. We could build those structures, we could mine those structures, but if we are not decided on how to deal with China and how to view China, then we have a problem.
Can you actually assert the Philippines' sovereignty without necessarily playing one superpower against the other? Because that's also a concern being voiced by Congressman Zarate, that you can't do that. Just side with the U.S. for now and then, have another policy when it comes to China. What do you think about that?
I think our congressman would have to study Vietnam. Vietnam, of course, had defeated 3 great powers in the past. But at this point in time, Vietnam is also cognizant of the fact that it needs a superpower ally, and that's the United States. Vietnam is a security partner of the United States, a country that it fought in the 1960s.
Yes.
So if Vietnam is doing it, why not the Philippines?
But I guess.
Yeah, Vietnam is a player. Yeah, the Vietnam is a player, a classic player. Pitting one great power against the other. It did it. It won the war against the United States because it was able to pit China against the Soviet Union. So it could extract military assistance from 2 socialist countries who had the feud during the Cold War. So even the country that is, had record of par excellence when it comes to statecraft relies on pitting one great power against the other. Aren't they only natural for us to learn from the experience of Vietnam?
Finally, we've been hearing from Secretary of Foreign Affairs Teddy Loxton Jr. saying he's been firing one diplomatic protest after the other. But is that going to be enough? without a clear policy, without a clear direction coming from the president himself.
Yeah, basically, I agree with you. We have to have a national direction. Well, he always tells us that when it comes to foreign policy, he's the architect. So where's the architect right now? So how can we have build a house if the architect's nowhere to be seen, nor his plan? Of course, this also raises a question if we have actually a foreign policy or not.
And that's another topic altogether. That's going to be another discussion. But for now, we're going to have to leave it at that. Professor Renato De Castro, always a pleasure talking to you. You continue
Thank you very much, keep safe.
Take care.
You too. Regards to your family.
I will.
Especially to my former teacher.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
A possible setback in the world's COVID-19 inoculation efforts. Experts are warning the more infectious COVID-19 variant tearing through Brazil, mutating in ways that could make it more resistant to vaccines. Let's get the details in this report.
Researchers in Brazil, where a surging death toll is causing international alarm, found that the country's P1 coronavirus variant is mutating in ways that could make it more resistant to vaccines. The study, conducted by the Public Health Institute Fiocruz and released this week, found mutations in the spike region of the virus, where it can enter and infect the body's cells. That's particularly troublesome, said one of the study's authors, who explained that this creates another escape mechanism for the virus to evade the responses of antibodies. The P1 variant, which has quickly become dominant in Brazil, is thought to be a large factor behind a massive second wave that has brought the country's death toll to over 350,000, the second highest in the world behind the United States. Brazil's outbreak is also increasingly affecting younger people, with hospital data showing that in March, more than half of all patients in intensive care were aged 40 or younger. São Paulo Health Secretary Jean Gorenstein.
In the first wave, we saw mainly older people, but this is not what we're seeing now. It's a disease that has shown itself to be more aggressive, particularly in young people, since these young people are putting off going to the hospital because they're more relaxed about the illness because they are young, so they arrive in much more serious condition.
São Paulo, Brazil's richest and most populous state, has warned that its ability to care for seriously ill COVID-19 patients was on the verge of collapse as it ran dangerously low on key drugs, according to a report Wednesday in the country's largest newspaper. President Jair Bolsonaro has been widely criticized for his handling of the pandemic, including downplaying the disease's severity, promoting dubious treatments, and repeatedly opposing social distancing measures. Experts say his handling of the outbreak has encouraged the virus to run rampant. São Paulo Governor João Doria.
It is very sad. We should have leadership from the federal government, an organized public health process, national coordination. We have a lack of national coordination, disregard for transparency, and even hostility toward the press.
Brazil's Supreme Court confirmed on Wednesday an earlier decision by one of its judges that the Senate install a committee to investigate the federal government's response to the coronavirus pandemic.
The Philippine Health Department still not concerned with a COVID-19 mutation set to be undetectable through a PCR test. That new variant was first reported in France last month. But for Philippine Health Chief Francisco Duque, this is still considered a variant of interest, not a variant of concern, due to the lack of information on its nature.
Siyempre, kung pakikinggan mo lang yung report na hindi na-detect ng RT-PCR, ang tatanungin mo, paano kaya nilang nalaman na may ganun kung hindi naman pala na-detect ng RT-PCR? E ang detection mo, RT-PCR. Eh kung hindi nga na-detect, anong ginamit nila para ma-detect? Mag-aantay tayo ng WHO advisory on this dahil sila naman talaga ang may kakayahan para kilalanin at tukuyin kung ano ba talaga itong virus, itong coronavirus na ito na sinasabing hindi ma-detect gamit ang RT-PCR. So yun lang masasabi ko sa ngayon.
More than 8,000 new infections were reported in the Philippines Wednesday. The death toll, meanwhile, jumped to 15,447, with 162 new fatalities. The health department notes COVID-19 clusters are increasing in workplaces, especially hospitals. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says there is little chance of contracting COVID-19 by touching contaminated surfaces. But Philippine health officials say this should not be a reason for people to let their guard down. More from Isai Reyes.
Carmelita Silva owns a small restaurant in Valenzuela City. She regularly disinfects her groceries before entering her home. She fears the products she brought from the market could be carriers of the new coronavirus. With different kinds of people visiting her restaurant, cleaning and disinfection of tables and chairs is a must.
Sobrang natatakot ako kasi baka mamaya ako yung magdala ng virus sa loob ng bahay. Siguro sa iba, OA, maarte. Pero para sa akin, ayun yung nakikita kong protection para sa pamilya ko. Hindi ko nakikita yung virus eh.
Like Carmelita, many people acquired the habit of spraying alcohol on anything from pens to cell phones, as well as washing dry goods and fruits with soap and water. Establishments have sanitation areas, misting people before entering malls and offices. But based on a recent study by the United States Center for Disease Control and Prevention, there is only a 1 in 10,000 chance a person can contract the virus from touching a contaminated surface. The CDC says once-a-day cleaning is enough if there are no confirmed or suspected COVID-19 patient in the household. According to Dr. Ron Jean Solante, an infectious diseases specialist, other studies show that the COVID-19 virus dies when exposed to air.
Once they are exposed also to surfaces, that will make the virus inactivated. Hindi na sila ganun kabilis mabilis lang namamatay pag nandun na sila sa surfaces. Namamatay na doon kasi the contact with inanimate object, medyo mainit, mayroong medyo malamig, masyado. Very sensitive din ang virus.
From tests done in several locations, such as hotels, laboratories, and hospitals, the cycle threshold shows that the sampled areas do not contain the amount of virus viable for it to spread. Although it is a fact that the virus can stay in inanimate objects for days, it may not be enough to be transmitted.
All of this will not be equivalent, will not tell you na pag tumatagal siya, nakakahawa. So hindi na, no? Namamatay din siya. So yung mga nakikita doon na talagang hindi na siya viable na mga viruses.
Solante adds, the major mode of transmission is still through respiratory droplets. But the health department says Filipinos should continue to follow health and safety protocols.
No matter how small the percentage of the affectation or yung ibibigay na virus dito sa surfaces na to, importante pa rin po yan at kasama po yan sa kabuong strategies natin.
Extra precaution is needed since there will always be asymptomatic carriers of the virus. The CDC said people should have a routine cleaning plan for homes and the workplace. Clean high-touch surfaces such as doorknobs, elevator and light switches at least once a day. Computers, keyboards and cell phones in the workplace should also be cleaned, as well as faucets, toilets and sinks. The CDC also said the effectiveness of alternative disinfection methods such as the use of UV radiation and lead blue light against the virus has not been fully proven. Fumigation and fogging are also not recommended because of the possible side effects of the harmful chemicals used in solutions. Isai Reyes, ABS-CBN News.
COVID-19 jabs destroyed in a fire that broke out inside the building of the Misamis Oriental Provincial Health Office. A provincial health officer said at least 30 doses of Sinovac as well as other important documents were lost to that blaze. The health office vows to continue the province's COVID-19 vaccination drive despite the incident. So far, the Philippines has already vaccinated more than 1.25 million individuals over a month since the government kicked off its inoculation program. The Philippine Trade Department estimates 1.5 million Filipino workers were displaced during the 2 weeks of enhanced community quarantine. Trade Secretary Ramon Lopez says 500,000 of these workers were able to return to work after government eased the quarantine status this week. Meanwhile, Lopez says COVID-19 clusters in workplaces only make up 20% of the Philippines' active infections. This statement comes after the health department said it noticed an increase in COVID-19 clustering in workplaces.
Base ho sa data, again, hindi ho malaking source yung sa workplace. Yes, nakakontribute po sila, especially dito po sa mga, kaya po pinagbawal ng maigi itong pagsasalo-salo, eating together during siguro lunch break, yung pagkain sa canteen, pagkain sa mga pantry, mga kainan na lugar sa mga workplaces, yun po yung isang pinagbawal ng maipit. Pero base sa datos, ang contribution po ng mga cases ay mga clusters so ng ilan sa workplaces ay around 20% lamang. Ang karamihan po talaga ay nangyayari sa labas. Maaari pong sa mga communities at maaari din sa household at saka po sa transportation.
A community doctor in the Philippines criticizes the health department for supposedly failing to properly support rural communities amid the pandemic. Dr. Jean Inmispero says the DOH's pronouncements on COVID-19 do not reflect the situation in local communities. He says some areas still lack equipment, proper health systems, and even information dissemination.
But if you focus only on the hospital, and every time you report, the DOH and the spokesperson would always report, healthcare utilization is only this percent. You're missing out on the spread of the disease. That's why they never focus on testing and contact tracing, because they're only looking at healthcare utilization. Mm-hmm. If you really seriously wanted to address the spread of COVID, you want to identify where is it spreading. So you have to do contact tracing and mass testing and contact tracing. That's very fundamental in any pandemic. You have to know where it's starting, where the clustering is happening, so that you can prepare yourself and the hospitals are adequately prepared. What are they doing now? Now that it's inundated, they're asking for more hospital wards, they're more asking for ICU beds. That's knee-jerk already. That's reactionary. That's too late.
We're going to take another break now. Coming up, U.S. President Joe Biden announces an end to America's longest war. And also, we'll get an update on that severe tropical storm threatening to dump heavy rains throughout the Philippines in the coming days. Dateline Philippines will return after the break. Stay with us here on ANC. At the weather, a severe tropical storm that's threatening to intensify further is barreling towards the Philippines. Pagasa weather forecaster Anna Gloria now joins us for more. Anna, what more can you tell us?
Yes, good afternoon. The severe tropical storm Surigay was estimated at around 1,095 kilometers east of Mindanao. It is still located outside our area of responsibility. It has maximum sustained winds of 95 kilometers per hour near the center and gustiness of up to 115 kilometers per hour. It is moving westward at 10 kilometers per hour, and it is expected to enter our area of responsibility between tonight and tomorrow morning. And then it is expected to reach a typhoon category in the next 36 hours and may continuously intensify. Once it enters our area of responsibility, it will be named Bising, but as of the moment, it has no direct effect in any parts of the country. Well, today, We're expecting partly cloudy to cloudy skies with isolated rain showers over Metro Manila and the rest of the country. It is due to the localized thunderstorm. Temperature range here in Metro Manila is from 24 to 32 degrees Celsius, while in Baguio City is around 15 to 23 degrees Celsius, while in Tagaytay is around 21 to 30 degrees Celsius. And that's the latest from PAGASA. This is Anna Cloren reporting.
Thanks a lot, Anna. You keep safe, and to you and the rest of the team there, thanks. The National Bureau of Investigation wrapping up its investigation into the shootout between the police and the Drug Enforcement Agency in Quezon City last February. And as Nico Bawa tells us, the NBI found both parties committed lapses in that deadly operation.
This is the reconstruction of the crime scene where operatives of the PDEA and the PNP engaged in a shootout in Commonwealth Avenue in Quezon City last February 24. This is based on the ballistics test conducted on the guns of the operatives, the retrieved shells and bullets, and their positions in the CCTV video.
Yung forensic investigation will be compared and cross-matched with the testimonial pieces of evidence dun sa statements or affidavits.
In their investigation, both agencies had lapses in planning their drug operation. The police admitted that they had used a prisoner as an asset to pose as a buyer in the buy-bust operation. On the PDEA side, their team leader explained that he trusted their asset on the information he shared about a drug dealer, but it wasn't clear what the terms were between him and the dealer.
Too early, we're looking into the both agencies on their lapses, operational lapses. We will also look into whether PNP or PDEA followed their own operational procedures and protocols in the conduct of this operation.
36 police and 15 PDEA operatives have already submitted their statements. More personnel are being subpoenaed to identify which of them had beaten up PDEA operatives after the shootout, which were seen in CCTV cameras.
We are looking at whether there was justified or unjustified or unnecessary use of force, reasonable use of force, deadly force. Was there use of excessive force? Kung nakadapa na, kailangan pa bang sipain?
The NBI admitted that they've had problems investigating since some of their agents and the PDEA operatives came out COVID positive and had to lock down their offices. They are hoping that they'll be able to file charges before the month ends. Two policemen, a PDEA agent, and a PDEA asset died in the Commonwealth shootout. Nico Bawa, ABS-CBN News.
In the U.S., the white police officer who fatally shot a black man during a traffic stop in Minneapolis arrested and charged with second-degree manslaughter. Kim Potter's charge carries a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison and a $20,000 fine. Potter's arrest comes a day after she resigned from her post. She shot Dante Wright on Sunday after appearing to mistake her handgun for her taser. But Wright's family has rejected the motion to make that the notion the 20-year-old's killing was an accident. Activists and mothers of black men killed by police also speaking up.
I want to say whoever said time heals all wounds did not lose a child.
Wow.
Because we are never going to heal. This country has done something to us that will never be repaired.
Manslaughter, too, is the least she should get.
Mm-hmm.
The least,
yep.
Possibly more. When you look at the fact that you're dealing with a 26-year veteran, if she didn't know in 26 years the difference in size and weight of a gun as opposed to a taser, then how was she a veteran in policing?
Wright was shot on Sunday after being pulled over for an expired car registration. Officers later discovered there was a warrant out for his arrest. A medical expert who testified in defense of former policeman Derek Chauvin disputes the findings that George Floyd died due to homicide. He says the cause of death was heart disease. Here's the latest in the Boulder trial.
Mr. Floyd died of a cardiac arrhythmia
due to hypertensive atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease during the restraint.
The defense's medical expert in the murder trial of Derek Chauvin told the jury on Wednesday that he believed George Floyd's death during his arrest was the result of heart disease and said it was possible that exhaust fumes could have played a role.
There is exposure to a vehicle exhaust, so potentially carbon monoxide poisoning.
Dr. David Fowler, who was Maryland's chief medical examiner until his retirement in 2019, appeared to dispute at least some of the findings of Hennepin County's chief medical examiner, who ruled Floyd's death a homicide, and said he would fall back to an undetermined ruling.
So this is one of those cases where you have so many conflicting, different manners. The carbon monoxide would usually be classified as an accident.
Fowler testified that the fentanyl and methamphetamine found in Floyd's blood may also have contributed to his death, along with possible carbon monoxide poisoning from exhaust fumes from the vehicle next to where Chauvin kneeled on Floyd's neck for 9 minutes.
You haven't seen any data or test results that showed Mr. Floyd had a single injury from carbon monoxide. Is that true?
That is correct, because it was never sent to the laboratory for that test.
I asked you whether it was true, sir. Yes or no?
It is true.
In cross-examination, the prosecution grilled Fowler, who conceded that he did not know for certain whether the police car was still running during the arrest, and he agreed with prosecutor Jerry Blackwell that Floyd should have been given immediate first aid.
As a physician, I would agree.
U.S. President Joe Biden announces his plan to send American troops home from Afghanistan, saying it's time to end the country's longest war. Biden aims to withdraw all 2,500 U.S. troops remaining in Afghanistan no later than September 11. It's the same day America will mark the 20th anniversary of the Al-Qaeda attacks that triggered the U.S.-led invasion. The final withdrawal will start on May 1.
With the terror threat now in many places, keeping thousands of troops grounded and concentrated in just one country at a cost of billions each year makes little sense to me and to our leaders. We'll not conduct a hasty rush to the exit. We'll do it responsibly, deliberately, and safely. And we will do it in full coordination with our allies and partners, who now have more forces in Afghanistan than we do. And the Taliban should know that if they attack us as we draw down, we will defend ourselves and our partners with all the tools at our disposal.
NATO allies will also pull out their troops from Afghanistan on May 1. NATO Secretary General says they plan to complete the withdrawal within a few months.
This is not the end of our relationship with Afghanistan, but rather the start of a new chapter. NATO allies and partners will continue to stand with the Afghan people. But it's now for the Afghan people to build a sustainable peace.
After withdrawing, the U.S. and NATO aim to rely on the Afghan military and police forces to maintain security in the South Asian country. The chief of the Central Intelligence Agency warns Washington's ability to collect intelligence and act on threats will diminish when U.S. troops leave Afghanistan. CIA Director William Burns underscored that risk when he testified before the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee on Wednesday.
It is also a fact, however, that after withdrawal, whenever that time comes, the CIA and all of our partners in the U.S. government will retain a suite of capabilities, some of them remaining in place, some of them that we'll generate, that can help us to anticipate and contest any rebuilding effort. We will work very hard at CIA and with all of our partners to try to provide the kind of strategic warning to others in the U.S. government that enables them and us to address that threat if it starts to materialize.
But a senior government official says the Biden administration will keep intelligence and military capabilities in the region to deal with any emerging threats. However, that official also said al-Qaeda currently does not have the capability to attack the U.S. Bernie Madoff, the American businessman convicted for running the biggest known Ponzi scheme in history, has passed away in prison. He was 82. Here's the full story.
Bernie Madoff, convicted of running the largest known Ponzi scheme in history, died Wednesday in federal prison, where he was serving a 150-year sentence.
Mr. Madoff, when are you going to say something to the victims?
He'd been incarcerated in Butner, North Carolina, after he was sentenced in 2009 for engineering a fraud estimated as high as $64.8 billion. He was 82 years old. Madoff's thousands of victims included individuals, big and small, charities, pension funds, and hedge funds. Among those betrayed were actors Kevin Bacon, Kira Sedgwick, and John Malkovich, Baseball Hall of Fame pitcher Sandy Koufax, and a charity associated with Hollywood director Steven Spielberg. Nobel Prize winner Elie Wiesel's foundation lost more than $15 million in Madoff's fraud. Quote, "We thought he was God. We trusted everything in his hands," Wiesel said in 2009. For decades, Madoff ran his scheme out of a midtown Manhattan tower known as the Lipstick Building, lying to his clients about trades he never made and returns that didn't exist, while duping new clients into handing over their wealth. The money helped Madoff and his wife Ruth enjoy luxuries such as a Manhattan penthouse, a French villa, and expensive cars and yachts, with a combined net worth of about $825 million. The scheme collapsed when the 2008 financial crisis drove his investors to try and cash out, but their money was gone. Ruth Madoff was never charged. She said she felt her husband had betrayed her after nearly a half century of marriage. Their son, Mark, died by suicide in 2010 on the second anniversary of his father's arrest. Their other son, Andrew, died of cancer in 2014. No immediate members of his family were in court when he was sentenced to a century and a half behind bars. Madoff addressed his victims in attendance, saying, "I am sorry. I know that doesn't help you."
Argentina tightens coronavirus restrictions in and around its capital, Buenos Aires, in response to a spike in COVID-19 cases. The measures will take effect Monday and last until April 30th. Within that period, schools will be closed while religious and cultural activities will be suspended. An 8 p.m. curfew will also be imposed to limit social activity. The restrictions not sitting well with some residents who reportedly banged pots and pans to express their dismay. Argentina has more than 2.6 million COVID-19 cases, with more than 58,000 fatalities. Turkey imposes new COVID-19 restrictions for the first 2 weeks of the Islamic holy month of Ramadan. The new restrictions include an extension of the weekday curfew, intercity travel, and public transport limitations. There is also a ban on all events in closed spaces until after the holiday. This comes as Turkey battles a surge in COVID-19 infections, with 62,000 new infections recorded on Wednesday alone. The country's daily case count jumped by 5 times since government eased social curbs. Denmark becomes the first country to permanently stop using AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine. That's due to its possible link to very rare blood clot cases. Denmark says its investigation showed 1 in 400,000 recipients of the vaccine would get serious side effects. This will push back the scheduled conclusion of Denmark's vaccination program from July 25th to early August. As of April 4th, the European Medicines Agency has received 169 reports of blood clotting out of 34 million AstraZeneca doses administered in the continent. The World Health Organization had said the benefits of the vaccine still outweigh the risks. In the NBA, the Philadelphia 76ers are back in the driver's seat in the race for the top seed in the Eastern Conference. They defeated the injury-riddled Brooklyn Nets 123-117 in what could be a review of the East Finals. MVP candidate Joel Embiid paced the Sixers with 39 points and 13 rebounds. Kyrie Irving had 37 points for the Nets, who played the game without All-Stars Kevin Durant, James Harden, and mid-season pickups Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines Podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, everyone. Keep it here on ANC.